From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Every year, Florida gets a county-by-county report card of sorts, ranking each of its 67 counties according to the health of its citizens. Here in Southwest Florida, we are home to some of the highest ranked and some of the lowest. Sarasota and Collier counties rank among the top five, while Glades and Hendry County land towards the bottom of the list. We'll talk with regional health planners about the disparity, and we'll also find out if these rankings are worth more than just bragging rights, and find out if this kind of data can lead to meaningful action to improve less healthy parts of our area. Plus, he's a performer who's tackled LGBT rights, marriage equality, family history, and immigration. And his controversial work even took him to the Supreme Court in a fight over funding for art. Now, performance artist Tim Miller is coming to our area for 2 weeks of working with students at FGCU as an artist in residence. We'll talk with him about how he approaches social issues and controversial topics in his shows, and what issues he's working with students to address during his time in Southwest Florida. But first, the news. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Performance artist Tim Miller has made a career of mixing his one-man performances with activism. The internationally renowned writer and performer says he combines his work and social values to ask, what do we want to see our country provide? His performances have focused on LGBT rights, marriage equality, immigration, and more. He's no stranger to tackling controversial subjects. And in 1990, he was part of a fight for arts funding and free speech that went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. Miller is hosting an artist residency at FGCU's Theater Lab now through April 9th, which includes a solo performance, student workshops, and culminates with a weekend of performances. Tim Miller, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Great to be here.
We are talking about performance artist Tim Miller and with the man himself, about his artist residency at FGCU and a career that has seen him tackle a variety of social issues. What questions do you have about his performances or his work? Call in and ask your questions and share your thoughts at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, Tim Miller, you've been performing for years, and you've never shied away from controversial topics like LGBT rights. When did you know that you wanted to be a performer, and how did your art become infused with the kind of social activism that you've become known for?
Well, in a way, almost from the get-go, and I was a, teenage theater kid, not much younger than most of the students I'm working with for these 10 days while I'm here. Certainly as a 15, 16-year-old, I was, out in my high school in, the late 70s, which was not typical at the time, though it was a very adventurous L.A. high school and huge high school. I knew my kind of future as a theater artist, if I wanted to be telling the stories around my identity as a gay person, which was very important to me as a kid, and also the political perspectives I had, because I had very strong points of view around that, I was probably going to have to create the plays, the performances myself, and not expect, like in that conventional actor way, for anybody to write the play for me. I was going to have to write it myself, and in that writer-performer form, which kind of connects to the performance artist form in this country really strongly, that was going to be what I needed to do. And was while still a teenager, I'd moved from LA to New York and founded really quickly the biggest center for experimental performance in the U.S., PS-122, and began my wild adventures of art, politics, social texts, sexuality, and governmental censorship that soon began to follow me.
Well, where you began, the time when you began was a very different time. There just wasn't really anything on offer that you could have used as somebody else's written play. I mean, you just really had to invent your own thing.
It was necessity was really determining this. There were certainly there were things, there were plays, there were existing texts, not many, where a young someone, who's a 16-year-old now can be looking to Tony Kushner's Angels in America, the most acclaimed play of the last 25 years, won every single award imaginable. There was nothing comparable that way. If I was going to create this theater around what it is to be a gay American citizen at the time I was as a young person, it was going to be up to me to do it. But in some ways, I feel it's still that way. It's still for a young performer who wants to create work around their identity as being, gay and Latino, gay and Black, gay and disabled. It's still very, very limited. Even just the recent Oscar season, where we finally had for the first time, a film win the Best Oscar Award, Best Film Award in Moonlight. That was the first gay film that has ever won the award, and certainly the first representation of what it is in South Florida as a gay. It's a Florida movie too, which I think is really important of what Liberty City is like and what that reality of a gay Black man in Liberty City in Miami is about. So there's still so much work to be done. in these representations.
So the U.S. Supreme Court ruled same-sex couples have a constitutional right to marriage in 2015, but you had focused on that issue in your work, obviously, for many years prior to that. But around that time, it became an issue tied to immigration. So what was that connection for you?
Well, my husband, Alistair McCartney, who's a writer and now professor for many years at Antioch University in Los Angeles, we met in 1994 in London, and he's an Australian citizen and also has British passport as well. But once our relationship began, it became immediately clear to me, I knew it from the minute it started, that unlike straight folks in America until 2 years ago, you could fall in love with someone, but you couldn't marry them under federal law and get them a green card. And we struggled for 20 years for Alistair to remain in the United States. He didn't see his family for 17 years in Australia because we felt it was unsafe for him to leave the country until he had a green card. And a lot of my work, that was my entry to, as one example of just how unjust that was, that gay lesbian and gay couples were being denied, you know, one of those 1,114 federal rights that are afforded through marriage, immigration rights and the ability to get your spouse a green card was chief among them. So for that time, through four or five shows, I was really exploring that in different ways and how that compromised my sense of my identity as a citizen. I didn't identify as being a citizen then because I was just denied too many of the rights reserved for heterosexual citizens. So I was one of the main artists doing work around marriage equality through the immigration angle with, you know, which is work I'm really proud of. And it is now settled law. I think even with the current nuttiness in Washington, D.C., I don't think that is going to come. That's not on the menu, you know.
Not reversible.
I don't think it's not reversible. It would be very complicated.
So your shows, how do you do yours? Do you have like a show that you do for a span of time? Like you said, you focused on immigration for a period of time. And then do you focus on a different issue at a different period of time? Do you kind of evolve that way as the times, they are a-changing, and you go with what's happening at the time?
Right. Well, absolutely. Because certainly, you know, when I arrived in New York City as a 19-year-old right before the beginning of the AIDS crisis, you know, the majority of my work for the first, you know, in my 20s and first half of my 30s was responding to HIV/AIDS because there was simply no question if a global pandemic sails into the world as it did in 1981, artists would, should, and could respond. In fact, I think we were first responders long before science had kicked in any useful way. The people that were doing stuff were healthcare providers and artists, and we had this explosion of theater, dance, music, cultural response to HIV/AIDS. For many years, it was the only response we had that was actually helping us figure out, you know, other than hand-to-hand healthcare and caregiving. So that, to me, was a strong template. And, you know, interestingly, at the moment when that became mostly resolved, at least if for people who have access to pharmaceutical drugs, which much of the world does, I shifted my focus in a way to the next 15 years of work around marriage equality, but all of it's within the LGBTQ civil rights progress, and we have made a lot of progress. And both those, AIDS was not ended, but it was mostly resolved through science ultimately, and marriage equality is resolved in our country, and we can put our energy elsewhere.
So now that you're here at this point and our country is at the point that it is, do you – when you're working with college students who are young, who haven't lived through that and who haven't felt so much like they've had to hide or as much like they had to hide. I mean, I remember in the early 90s it was – unusual that there was a guy that was out on my college campus. Of course, I was in the Midwest. So things have changed so much in that period of time. But do you feel like college students now understand the struggle that was not that long ago?
Well, there's certainly been progress and there's been improvement and change. On the other hand, people, if you're 18 years old and this is your first year at college, university, at FGCU, you're still dealing with your family realities. You're dealing with your religious upbringing. You know, their students have been mentioning, I am working really hard to reconcile my identity as a gay person with the incredible negative violence I received from my religious upbringing. That battle is not over, depending on how you were raised. And I hear, that's a story I hear a lot because on some level, if you're 18, you're still really within your family family, cultural, religious, faith community reality. So in some ways, the work is done. On the other hand, it's never done. And we're always continuing to step up to, you know, address racism, homophobia, sexism. It's if anything, we're in more of a battleground now than we've been for many years.
Yeah, it has kind of gone a little bit in backwards. So you're touring now for a new show that's called Rooted. And you say that you connect your marriage to your husband in New York back in 2013 to a distant relative's marriage in New York back in the Civil War era. Can you tell me a little of that connection?
I was really interested. It's sort of the jumping off point for this new show. And I'm going to do in my performance on Tuesday at Florida Gulf Coast University, commercial, I'm going to do a couple sections from the show and a couple of other of my favorite pieces, partly to get a bigger social view in a way of the work I've been doing. The idea of the show was at the moment as I left the city clerk of Manhattan. I live in L.A., but I was in New York with my husband, soon to be husband, with the day the Supreme Court decision overturning the Defense of Marriage Act came through. As soon as we got that New York State marriage license, I've always been really – I have a copy of the marriage license of my great-great-grandfather at 20 years old, right after returning from fighting with, you know, the Union Army during the Civil War, his New York State marriage license in 1865. And to me, it was significant to imagine these two documents together and what do they have to say to each other? What sparks fly from the two documents? And it became a beautiful way of, at this moment where we have seen some social change and some pretty fantastic, you know, and having spent 15 years working around marriage equality, the success of that movement is, you know, one of the biggest adventures and victories of my whole life. And it's a moment, though, to look back of where we come from, where we go next, and somehow the sparks that fly from that those two marriage licenses separated by 128 years send me on a really interesting journey in this new show. And
do you imagine his life and his decisions?
I sure do, yeah. And I it led me into that genealogy, Alice in Wonderland rabbit hole, of course, which many Americans are caught up with in, as we know from the Ancestry.com ads.
Yes, 23andMe.
Yes, exactly that, yeah. which is, you know, you have to enter at your peril because it's a surefire way to bore every dinner guest.
Yeah, and to burn many hours of internet time.
And it's expensive. But it's led me on a really interesting trek to just imagine other social justice moments. I mean, I understand my great-grandfather as having been part of the largest social justice movement in our country to erase human slavery and the most violent that killed almost 1 million people, in 150 years ago. So it's, to me, good company to imagine. It makes some of our struggles and challenges right now seem not as overwhelming, which I find pretty helpful.
It is a little comforting. But then fast forward to your activism as well, and you are no stranger to controversy because you were among the NEA 4, which is part of a group of artists at the center of a controversy over grants from the National Endowment for the Arts in the early 90s. So you were, forging ahead as well in your own way. Tell me about what happened back then.
Well, in 1990, in a direct attack on theater and performance, the first Bush president, was his poll numbers were plummeting, as a certain other presidents are currently, though not nearly as bad as the current one in the poll numbers. But he knew he had to throw some red meat to his disenchanted base, so he threw some lesbian gay artists overboard and told the federal agency, National Endowment for the Arts, to get rid of the queer artists who were getting support. Unanimously recommended support from the National Council of the Arts through the theater category. And this created a giant fuss during the culture wars. We were the only case that went all the way to the Supreme Court, myself and the three other performers. We got our grants back after the president of the United States had told them to refuse them. They were found to have violated the law and the Constitution. We got our checks, but then a certain part of the case went all the way to the Supreme Court. That was lost. It wasn't about us, but that the Congress could use general standards of decency as an excuse to defund artists. Something PBS is dealing with in the current regime.
Yeah, we're talking about the NEA, the National Endowment for the Arts, and the Trump administration has proposed cutting all of its funding. So, what would you like to say now? Now it's 2017. To people who think that this kind of a program is something that's disposable.
Last night, you know, for me, the main thing I'm doing here in Fort Myers, which I'm really enjoying, and I swam within 12 hours of arriving in the Gulf, which I'm an ocean person. salt water. But the main thing I'm doing here is working with the students. And for me, the main work I do, I love that I perform and I always perform wherever I go. And but the main thing I do is encourage young artists and to bring their voices forward and hedging my bets for the future that they're going to be around much longer than I am. And we need their voices for the future, their artistry. And last night, one of the performers, I'm working here for 10 days to create an hour-long original theater piece from their lives, their politics, their social vision, their love, their desires. And they're doing beautiful work. And last night, one of the performers, we were kind of speaking at the beginning, said, something like, I'm really thinking about, these news stories that Trump wants to erase the humanities and the arts and public broadcasting. And I just have to say, and then she couldn't speak because she was so struck silent by emotion and tears. My life was saved by theater. I saw a show that at a moment that was really hard for me. It gave me the courage to continue. It gave me the courage to be in my life. And to me, that's the, attacking the arts. Public broadcasting, the humanities is attacking the possibility of the future of young people and their ability to get stronger in themselves, know themselves. It's an incredible act of violence against the future. I would think this. I'm an artist. You would probably think this. You're in public broadcasting. But it's one of those stories that really rang out. It just happened last night.
When you see people that are so moved by the arts and then seeing and their fear of it possibly being taken away. And it's also a training ground. We don't go to the movies to see people who were not involved in the arts in the early parts of their lives, too.
Right.
So we are talking to performance artist Tim Miller about his artist residency at FGCU and a career that's seen him tackle a variety of social issues. What questions do you have about performance art or his work? Call in and ask your questions and share your thoughts at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So how did the idea of an artist residency at FGCU come up? You've done these at other schools before?
Oh, many, many schools, yeah.
So this is kind of like part of your job?
Yeah, I go to lots of colleges, universities, museums, art centers. It's become more and more what I do. I always perform, and I'm a solo performer, but I'm more and more a educator, director, deviser of these performance things to generate new voices. And here, my friend and colleague, Professor Dan Bacalzo here at Florida Gulf Coast University, who's been in his second year now, really knew about this work I do all over. I've been at more than 500 colleges and universities all over the country and other countries as well, and thought this would be a really good thing for this program and began doing the heavy work. It's all his doing to make it happen and bring the energies and the commitment and the resources together and to make this piece happen, that out of these 16 performers are going to create an original hour-long work. Then,
so the 16 performers are going to be working together to put together 1 hour?
Yeah, we're each night we're working and generating material, and through the workshop structure I lead them through, and they're exploring lots of stuff. At a certain point, though, they'll make a decision. What's the piece I most need to bring forward? What's the urgent value I want to express? What's the story I need to tell? What's the climate change has been coming up a lot, which I'm intrigued because it actually often doesn't come up a lot, and
it's kind of a big deal around here.
I think partly it's the South Florida, reality of this. It's something. I work in the Midwest a lot, and it didn't come up at University of Minnesota last week.
Yeah, the Mississippi is not rising.
Yes, not that far upstream.
Not that much.
Anyway. It is elsewhere, but to me, a young performer from Southern Mississippi, from Gulf Coast, Mississippi, talked about, his formative experience with Katrina and that this is his value to bring his awareness to make, do as much as we can in spite of the complete absence of any leadership from Washington to address climate change before it destroys most of coastal America, well, and the rest of the world too. So
you're getting kind of like an enviable slice of life of young people in America that not a lot of people have access to. I mean, you're going from city to city, college to college, and talking with this group that is dubbed the millennials. And this is a group of people that's kind of a mystery to older people and definitely marketers who would love to get their finger on the pulse
right.
of millennials. What do you think of the kids in college right now? I mean, and does it differ from place to place that much?
Oh, well, some. And, there's a difference between a big state university and a very small you know, liberal arts private college. It's different if, you know, I don't get invited to super conservative, religiously identified schools that often. But it's most – they're most often, you know, Methodist or Lutheran, you know, colleges, as so many of them are. That can change the reality a lot. But I think generally they're smart. They're committed. They're concerned about their future, as of course they should be, because the younger you are, the more likely, you know –
The more future you have to worry about.
Well, and yeah, the more likely you're going to see, especially if you live in South Florida, some dramatic and challenging changes. But, you know, this young man from South Mississippi, you know, Katrina's a while ago. He was probably 4 or 5 when it happened. You know, that's already a formative experience to see the that part of your Gulf Coast in Louisiana and Mississippi be wiped out, you know. So it's already been a part of his whole life. So to me, I am finding more younger people are more and more concerned about climate change, and it's coming into their work more of what their pieces they want to make. You know, certainly in an ongoing way, students of color are really concerned about the explosion of overt racist discourse encouraged at the highest level of our government, and the recent political campaign for president. That shows up a lot. I think they're smart. They're obviously more internet savvy and social network savvy than you or I will ever be, though we're probably both pretty savvy about that. I'm certainly there quite a bit, partly because I work with younger people so much. But I think they're an incredibly hopeful, committed, political, open to their feelings, much like that story of the person who feels this politics of trying, you know, of Trump wanting to not just erase the National Endowment of the Arts and Humanities, but also now to go into the current budgets and take money back, which is illegal. You can't actually do that, you know. But you know, he'll say anything. But to me, that they're starting to feel what the world they occupy, they take it in emotionally, but also really wanting to step up and speak up and fight for their future.
I think it's interesting that the young people today do seem – I mean, they were primarily, you know, in the last couple of years accused of being, you know, just self-involved and they don't care. But then in the last year and a half, it seems like you've really seen – I feel like I've seen another side of young people today. But this is a side that you've been seeing for a while.
I do. I work all over the country. I've performed and done performance projects in 46 of the 50 states. And I work in the Southeast more than any other part of the country. I work with thousands of 18 to 22 year olds every year, and I find them really impressive. And as you're saying, also the last couple of years, their renewed commitment to really engaging and taking on, making the country better, making it more a country they want to live in. People are quite disturbed by the current reality they're in, as well they should be. And, you know, they've got a big generational challenge ahead. It's probably going to take a long time to undo the damage of the next couple of years.
Yeah. So about your performance, what kind of people are going to want to come and see your performance? Who would you like to attract? I mean, we're kind of in a conservative area of the state of Florida. So who would you like to see at your show?
My performance or the
– Your performance.
My solo.
And the students.
And the students. I think really any – you know, I'm going to perform several – chunks of material and talk a little bit about where they come from and also to speak some about how I'm working with the students, but I'll mostly be performing. I think really my work is funny, it's storytelling, it's political, it's personal. I think anybody who is interested in other people can engage with, you know, it's super accessible. I traffic in humor probably more than I should, but of course it works, it plays.
People like humor.
Yeah, they do, and it helps people when I'm at a super conservative Bible college and I'm the first gay performer they've ever had on campus, I've got a little bit of a heavy lift to do there, and the humor helps make that work. And so, you know, you learn that as, you know, it just happens naturally. Within the student work, you know, which is 3 nights of performances, April 7th, 8th, 9th at FGCU, I think there's an incredible opportunity to see exactly what you're talking about, to see what young people are thinking about, what when we give them the voice to bring their urgency, their passions forward, what their politics and their personal material. It's a rare opportunity to really see where young people are living, how they occupy this, you know, moment that is a very particular one. But for them, if you're 18, this is the first months of your adult life.
I know. It's going to be fun. Well, we have links to information about where you can find out how to get to any of these shows on WGCUnews.org. Thank you so much for joining us, Tim Miller. He'll be an artist in residence at FGCU through April 9th, and we appreciate you stopping by. Our show today was produced by Matthew Smith and directed by Richard Chinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.